Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Some days there seems like there's more of them to expose and to condemn than there is time to do so. Instead of merely presenting the news, as so many do, I'm going to try to explain why these things are happening and what it ultimately means to you and your family. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His term. Yes, there is a God. He's unknown to those who are religious, but He is known to those who observe His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and who embrace His covenant. If you are rational, I promise you, this will be the best part of today's program. Our number, if at any time you'd like to question, criticize, affirm anything I have to say, or just engage in this discussion, is 877-376-4545. There were a couple of statements that were made during the news segment of the introduction to this program that I'd like to address, and then I'm going to jump right back into the tragedy that happened in Libya. It was a foreseeable tragedy in Libya, not unlike so many things that have happened to the United States in the past. As I will share with you, this tragedy in Libya is one where we made our own enemy. Something America does with great frequency. They had the CEO of Hobby Lobby make a comment on the news. I don't know why Hobby Lobby was newsworthy, but they are famous for their overt Christianity. And, well, the owner of that business can do anything that he wishes to do with the business, so long as it's not a public company. If he owns it, he ought to be able to adhere to any religious beliefs that he chooses, no matter how wrong they may be. But what was talked about is that they had succeeded by the grace of God. First of all, God is opposed to grace. Grace is the name of the Roman gratia, which were named after the Greek charities. They're the cute little naked girls that are the source of merriment. They're on the sides of wealthy pagan homes, on the frescoes on the walls to their homes. You'll see them all over Roman ruins. God has absolutely nothing to do with grace. If you're looking for an English term that describes what He is willing to do on our behalf, so long as we listen to Him, the term would be mercy. It's from the Hebrew chanan. Also, they are famous for observing the Lord's Day. Well, Lord is the title that Scripture affords Satan. God hates being called Lord. It's the opposite of what God wants. He does not want to lord over anyone. He wants to be dad. It is Satan, however, who does wish to own, to lord over, to control others, to influence them, to get them to worship him. And, of course, the Lord's Day has always been and will continue to be Sunday. Yahweh, the name of the only real God, He has a set-apart day where we are encouraged to focus on our relationship with Him, and that is the Sabbath, the seventh day of the week. All sun gods and all pagan religions were always worshipped on the Lord's Day, which is named in the God's honor, Sunday. Sorry, Mr. Hobby Lobby, but you've got it all wrong. And just one last thought on that. This notion that God somehow intervenes in business and He plays favorites and that He has usurped the free will of others, even thwarted competition so that Hobby Lobby, that is honoring the Christian God, who is a false God, could succeed, is repugnant. It is demeaning in the extreme. You know, this notion that Tim Tebow is honoring God when he thanks him for touchdowns. It's repulsive. It's demeaning. It's to say that God actually intervenes in the trivial affairs and competitions between people, and that he takes sides in such things, and he manipulates the playing field so that one side loses so the other can celebrate. It's disgusting. The other line that came across in this morning's news that deserves comment is the Chicago teachers' strike, where a quasi-literate person said, it isn't about the money, it's about being evaluated. Well, every union is about the money. Unions exist because of the money. The teachers' union, because of the money paid to teachers, have deprived children in schools of so many services, so many programs that they once enjoyed, that we once enjoyed, that they no longer have. And they no longer have them, not because we're not investing more money in our schools. No, we're investing many times more money in our schools. It's because the money is now all going to teachers and the administrators and not to programs. Yes, Scott.
They also only work 9 months a year, and I do that with quotations because technically there's a ton of school days that they get off. And
yes.
The average median salary for a Chicago teacher, mm-hmm, $71,000.
You know what it is, the state of California?
What?
It's over $100,000.
So that's more money than I make.
for a job that starts later than most people show up to businesses, for a job that they leave earlier than most people leave for businesses, for a job that whereby you are evaluated all of the time. In fact, your compensation is directly related to the valuation of your contribution. And yet they want to be paid more than private sector employees who are evaluated all the time, and yet they don't want to be evaluated. It's the idea that once I have this job, I don't have to do diddly squat, and you've got to pay me.
It's a pointless strike for them. I would not give them any more money. especially since when you look at the education rankings of the states.
You know, I did a survey, Scott, about 3 or 4 months ago, because of California being bankrupt, and I was trying to show that Jerry Brown's evaluation of why California was bankrupt was completely erroneous, and that there were meaningful reasons why California was bankrupt. The biggest of them happens to be pensions, where politicians give unions pensions and ongoing medical care that doesn't hit the books immediately, that becomes draconian in its influence down the road. And that's the unfunded mandates that have just bankrupted so many states and bankrupting America. But in that evaluation, I looked at teachers' salaries. And what I found is you can do the same thing. I encourage any one of you who are listening here to do the same thing. If you look up average SAT scores, which is the fairest way to evaluate how effective a school district is preparing their pre-college students for college admittance. If you look up the average SAT scores by state, and then you look up the average teacher compensation by state, and what you will find is that performance, the ability of the student to get into college because of a high test score, varies indirectly with teacher salaries. The higher the teachers, the more the teachers are paid, the poorer the students perform. The less the teachers are paid, the better the students perform. It is an indirect evaluation. And so this crybaby mantra that is, we can't, shortchange our children, and we need to invest in their education, all that is a mantra to pay the union of teachers more money. Now, I'm sorry if I've offended some people with this, and I'm certain there's some good, hardworking teachers that aren't paid fairly, that are unfairly compensated, and that they contribute a great deal. But I'm here to tell you that in the overwhelming scope of things, the teachers' unions have destroyed our ability to properly educate our children, have destroyed the programs that they would benefit from in their college experience. You know, there's very few schools now that have shop, which was a huge part of my education. Just to learn how engines work, to learn how to use tools to work wood, to understand electronic equipment. It was stuff that I was able to use throughout life. It practical skills. They don't do that stuff anymore. So many programs. I took music programs. I was never very good at it. But just having an appreciation for how difficult it is to make an instrument sing, gave me a greater appreciation for the arts. We don't do that stuff anymore. In school, I spent much of my time after school in rhetoric competitions and forensics speaking competitions, where we learned extemporaneous speaking, we learned impromptu speaking, we learned how to effectively debate, we learned the rules of logic and the flaws of logic. It's not taught anymore. Why? Because we're overpaying teachers and not investing in the right places in schools to create a genuinely meaningful education environment for the students. Now, there are exceptions, but if you look at the broad scope of things, what's happening in Chicago helps us evaluate what's wrong with the education system in America. Yes, Scott?
I think you're getting a different type of person that wants to be a teacher now as well. Because, I mean, back when I went to school, I had a teacher that knew everybody by name. He knew how to motivate each of us in a different way, and he got the best results out of his class. I have a sister that's still in high school, and she doesn't have any teachers like that. So I think and she went to the same high school I went to. So, I mean,
you know, when I compare my high school experience to that of children in public schools today, and I was educated in the public school system up to college. I went to a private college, but all prior to that was public. It is horrendous. We ended up taking our children out of public school. I wanted to give our children the same kind of grounding and upbringing that I had in terms of public schools. I thought that was actually a benefit. I looked for it as being an advantage to being in public schools and getting to know kind of people from all strata of life and being, you know, so integrated in the community. Well, when we would go to those back to school days and talk to the teachers about what they were going to teach and how they were going to teach it, and I was horrified. My kids in the fifth grade knew more about the subjects that were going to be taught to them than the teachers did. It was an abomination. And so we ended up having to take them out and take them to private schools where teachers are evaluated, where the school is evaluated, where the parents decide, are you performing a job, a mission for my child that is worth what I pay you? And until parents have that control over education, it's going to continue to crater, which is what's happening in America. It's why we have so many problems in America. Most Americans aren't aware of what they need to understand and are no longer schooled in logic and rhetoric. And we have done this to ourselves. I am Hiata. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back to the story on Livia after the break.
Cool. Yeah, silver.
Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. For those interested in engaging in this conversation, 877-300-7645. As promised, I'm going to return to the story in Libya. It is a story that so few understand, and understanding it is essential. The United States is directly responsible for what happened to its ambassador and to three others in Libya. We created the very enemy, not once but twice. We armed the very enemy, not once but twice, that killed our politicians, our ambassador, and staff members. Why do I say that? I say that because those that attacked were members of fundamentalist Islamic jihadist groups. They were mujahideen. One of the largest sources of foreign mujahideen to Afghanistan, while the United States was working with the Pakistani government to fund and arm the Taliban and their new ally, Al-Qaeda, so that they would attack the Soviet-backed government of Afghanistan, were Libyans. There were more Libyans per capita in Afghanistan to join what was called the Great Jihad than any other country. Most of the leaders of the Libyan uprising against Muammar Gaddafi were leaders in the Great Jihad, an American-sponsored attack on the Soviet-backed government. We created this monster. back then. We armed this monster with about $5 billion worth of weaponry supplied by the CIA. After the Great Jihad, they returned to Libya. Now, they did return again to Afghanistan and to Iraq to fight alongside other mujahideen to kill Americans after we foolishly invaded both of those countries. Then they returned again to Libya. This time, when they returned to Libya, they began a civil war that was armed by Qatar, Bahrain, and the Sudan, all with American-supplied weapons. And the America began to bomb Muammar Gaddafi, who was a bad dictator, no question about it. But we aided and abetted the jihadists, the most fundamentalist Muslims, the mujahideen. And we armed them again. We enabled them to take control of Libya. We not only created our enemy once, we created them twice. When the president says, I'm going to hold those accountable, and I will seek justice for those who perpetrated this crime, all he has to do is look in the mirror. There has been no president in American history, probably no politician in American history, who has spoken more in favor of the Muslim on the street in Egypt, in Libya, in Tunisia, Syria. This is a president who sides with the Muslims, who tells them that they and their religion are great when it is the opposite of that. And the evidence is ubiquitous. It's undeniable. It's irrefutable that Islam destroys everything it touches. Open your eyes. Look at these Islamic countries. Look what the most, just watch what the most fundamentalist Muslims do. They kill. They squelch freedoms. They're enraged, usually based on lies. They're so easily deceived. We are responsible for the deaths of our own citizens. And yet, there isn't one American in 1,000 that's willing to hold Mr. Obama accountable. That wouldn't have made any difference if John McCain had won. I'm not a Republican here speaking on behalf of Republican candidates and against Democratic candidates. I say a plague on both of their houses. Matter of fact, for those who would like to read an extraordinarily brilliant exchange on why we ought not vote, I would encourage you to go to yadaya.com, participate in the Yadaya Forum. And there is a string of just brilliant exchanges between enlightened individuals as to why we ought not participate in the political process in America. That when you align with the lesser of two evils, you are siding with evil, and evil bites you. It happens all of the time. We sided with evil in Libya, and Libya bit us in the side. That's what happens, and it's always predictable. Let's continue with the story as it was presented. I had three stories that were blended together, one by the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, another by the New York Times, a third by Reuters. So we're going to credit all of them for the horrible reporting that we're going to consider. And, of course, we're going to consider it after the break. The music is telling us that we'll have to pause a moment, and then we're going to dive in to the rest of these stories about the tragedy in Libya and what we can learn not only about it, but about ourselves through it. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Here we go.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Our number is 877-300-7645 if you wish to contribute to this discussion. As I promised, we're going to pick up on a story that is a blend of the reporting yesterday on the killings in Libya over a film that mocks Mohammed. That being the Muslim response being, let's go kill because we think somebody may have mocked our prophet. And this is a blend of stories from the BBC, from the New York Times, and from Reuters. It continues to talk about Mr. Sadek. Mr. Sadek, for those who listened yesterday, will remember, is a Copt Christian. A Copt is a form of Orthodox Christianity. Going back before Muhammad's hooligans raided Egypt, all of northern Africa, and the Middle East, Egypt was almost exclusively Christian. And the Copt religion, the Copt variation of Christianity, was what was dominant there. And then the Muslims came in and gave the Copt Christians a choice. Either convert to Islam, or we will treat you as a secondary class of citizen. As a matter of fact, citizen is too kind a term. We're going to treat you like an animal. We're going to confiscate your money and your property. You're going to pay us to oppress you, in other words. Or we'll kill you. Those are your choices. It's the jizya tax, which is an extraordinarily oppressive tax that's taught about in the Quran. That is the way that non-Muslims are to be oppressed and treated as secondary class of animals, essentially, in Islamic society. Dhimmi is the term that they will often use of this of these people. Muslims have an arrogance about them where they, like all insecure people, that putting others down creates a sense that they are somehow lifting themselves up. It is common among the insecure. Allah was insecure. Allah is Satan. It is his insecurity that drove him to rebel. So Mr. Sadek, who is a Copt Christian, who is now a minority in Egypt, because any time Islam is introduced into a society, others are treated so harshly that they either have to leave, they're killed, or they die off because they have so few rights. Copts now represent less than 10% of the population of Egypt, and they're dwindling rapidly. So Mr. Sadek, who's now living in America, never claimed in his email promoting Mr. Jones to have produced the movie. This is the Egyptian response was based upon a really ignorant member of the Islamic media in Egypt who associated the film with the Copt Christians in Egypt, and he has been a troubadour for Muslims terrorizing Copts in Egypt. But yet this Copt had nothing to do with the production of the film. He had nothing to do with the content of the film, and he had nothing to do with the cost to produce the film. Was uninvolved with the film. I think the only thing that he or some friend of his did is that they translated the dialogue in the film into Arabic. For the same reason that others have translated Prophet of Doom into Arabic, which is it's important that those who speak Arabic are given the truth about Muhammad so that they know how repulsive he was, so that they do not trust their soul to the most depraved man who ever lived. Well, Mr. Sadek says that he had nothing to do with the movie, that which, according to the story, dramatizes the life of Muhammad, incorporating scenes based upon slurs about him that are often repeated by Islamophobes. Boy, I tell you what. Hate is an appropriate term, and we're going to talk about this again. You know, if your rage is based on lies, then you ought to look in the mirror and say, what's wrong with me? You know, if you have a violent response to someone telling you, for example, that Christianity is a false religion, if that really angers you, then you ought to look in the mirror because your anger is misplaced. But when you know for a fact that people are doing an incredibly disingenuous job, when you know that they are beguiling people and making them easier prey for hostile doctrines like Islam, and you do not get angry at them, then you're like the father who is unwilling to show his animosity towards someone who is abusing his children. You're not loving your family if you're not willing to be angered by those who are misleading and misguiding and harming your children. Such is the case in this story. the scenes in this movie, and I haven't watched this particular movie, but the very fact that the scenes are based on slurs that are often repeated by Islamophobes is incredibly disingenuous and misleading. There are slurs on Muhammad that are often repeated by those who know Islam. Those who know the religion of Islam and are willing to say that 100% of the available evidence from the Quran and Hadith show that Muhammad was a rapist, that he was a pedophile, that he was incestuous, that he was a terrorist, that he was a mass murderer, that he was a slave trader, and that he committed many acts of kidnapping for ransom, and that he acknowledged that he was a liar. That those statements about Muhammad, about him being a mass murderer, are absolutely true. There is no other conclusion that can be developed from the evidence. If you do not know these things, it's because you do not know him. It's not something that you take out of context and you blow out of proportion with all the little wonderful things Muhammad did. If you read the Hadith, you read the history of Islam's formation, you read the biography of Muhammad as it was compiled within 200 years of his death, and you integrate what you learn with the Quran, what you find is that Muhammad spent all of his time doing perverted and violent things. That he was first and foremost a thief. And that his sexual perversions dominated his life. It's not that terrorism is a small aspect of this man's life, and that somehow it could be convoluted to him defending his religion, which was being attacked on all sides. Not the case. In 73 of the 75 terrorist attacks that Muhammad was involved in, he and his goons were the aggressors, and the victims were unarmed civilians. 73 of the 75. And the only two where Muhammad fought defensively was because he had terrorized the very people who came up to stop him countless times. The truth is that Muhammad was the most repulsive man who ever lived. And that's according to the Islamic scriptures. And so when there are statements about him that are considered slurs, you know, to call somebody a pedophile is a slur unless they are a pedophile. Muhammad was a pedophile. To call somebody a rapist when they're not a rapist would be a slur. But it's a statement of fact when it applies to Muhammad. To call Muhammad a terrorist would be a slur unless, if it weren't for the fact that he led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. Why are these same themes often repeated? Because they're true. That's why. By Islamophobes. You know, nothing angers me more than people applying labels, particularly when they're ignorant. The last thing someone like myself, like Ali Sena, like IQ Rasoli, like Waleed Shabbat, that are among the world's few articulate, well-informed spokespeople about Islam, who can tell you the truth about Islam, who are willing to tell you the truth about Islam, the thing that is the least true of us is that we're afraid of Islam. We've all received thousands of death threats. We are all told that unless we bring down our websites, which broadcast the truth around the world, unless we shut up, that they're going to kill us. And yet we continue to tell you the truth. We are the least afraid of Islam. It's the New York Times, the BBC, Reuters that are afraid of Islam. That's why they're unwilling to tell you the truth. Even if they knew it, they wouldn't say it. Those who speak honestly about Muhammad and therefore tell you that he was the least qualified person in human history to speak on behalf of God, that he was an avowed liar, a mass murderer, a terrorist, a kidnapper, a rapist, a pedophile, that he was incestuous, who's a kidnapper, mass murderer. Those voices, and who can document it and who can prove it, go read prophetofdoom.net. 1,000 pages of evidence proving what I'm telling you right now. all from the Islamic sources. I don't discredit Muhammad based upon some modern writer's interpretation. 100% of Prophet of Doom is based upon the earliest, the most legitimate, the most credible Islamic sources. Bukharis and Muslims, hadith collections, which are topical arrangements of sayings from Muhammad and his companions. The most credible source of hadith in the world. From Bukhari, Tubari, where he wrote the history of Islam. He is the most knowledgeable, the most credible commentator on the Quran. And his history is the only history of Islam written within 250 years of Muhammad's death. And the single most important book in Islam actually isn't the Quran. Islam would not exist if it were not for the Sira, which is the biography of Muhammad. There would be no Sharia law. The people who perpetrated this crime said that they were the friends of Sharia. Sharia law is based upon the depiction of Muhammad as he is presented in the hadith collections compiled chronologically by Ibn Ishaq in his Sira, which is the biography of Muhammad. When you read this document, in fact, even the first to translate the work of Ibn Ishaq, he said, it is hard to imagine that the followers of a religion created by this man would not see how repulsive he was. In every aspect of his life, he was disgusting. There is no such thing as a moral terrorist, as a moral kidnapper, as a moral pedophile, as a moral rapist, as a moral man engaged in incest, as a moral mass murderer, as a moral liar. And yet, the depiction of Muhammad in the earliest Islamic sources has him being at the extreme end of all of these things. Not indulging in them once, but as a pattern of behavior. So we'll return to this review of what happened in Libya after the break. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We were talking about the deplorable representation of those who speak truthfully about Islam and about Muhammad being labeled as those who promote slurs that are repeated by Islamophobes when the opposite of that is true. In fact, it's those who write for periodicals like the BBC and the New York Times that are the Islamophobes because they're afraid to tell the truth. Anyway, 3 days after Mr. Sadek, a Copt Christian, passed around a link to the film's trailer, Cairo newspaper reported that the leader of an Egyptian political party had denounced the production of the film with the participation of vengeful cops accompanied by the extremist priest Terry Jones. Well, first of all, Terry Jones is not a priest. May well be an extremist. I don't know. I think he's just a run-of-the-mill fundamentalist Christian. Cops ought to be vengeful. They have been assaulted and terrorized by Egyptian Muslims for centuries now, for about 13 centuries. And they had absolutely no participation whatsoever in this film. And so here now is the source of slurs is the Muslim media in Egypt. But guess what? This article doesn't correct that record. The same day, a scene from the film in which an actor playing a buffoonish caricature of the Prophet Muhammad. Now, buffoonish. So he is going to apply judgment to the film, the trailer, but not to the stupid statement by the Muslim media participant who wrongly reported that cops are vengeful and that Terry Jones is a priest and that the cops were somehow involved with this. Not gonna be judgmental about that lie, but yet he is going to be judgmental pejorative in his depiction of a buffoonish character of the Prophet Muhammad, not realizing that Muhammad wasn't a prophet. He never predicted anything accurately. And how do you call something buffoonish when the person being depicted was a rapist, a pedophile, incestuous, a mass murderer, a terrorist, a kidnapper, a thief, a liar, an overall scumbag? I mean, how can you present such a person without presenting them in a buffoonish way? It's not a caricature. It's an accurate presentation. Anyway, this was this segment was broadcast on the television channel Al Nas by the host Sheikh Khalid Abdallah. Now, this is about the only thing in this entire review in the media which gives you a glimmer of truth. Last year, the Egyptian-British journalist and blogger Sarah Carr wrote, Sheikh Khalid Abdallah, Abdallah means, by the way, slave to Allah, as part of a school of particularly shrill religious demagogues who turn every possible event into an attack on Islam, depicts accurately the source of this media story. She added that Sheikh Khalid regularly attacks Egypt's Copt Christian community. So, here's the source of the outrage. It's Sheikh Khalid Abdallah. Is he being held accountable by United States politicians? No. Did Egypt demote him and take him off the air? No. Is he in any way being singled out as the source of the lies which caused this to happen? No. Morsi, the Islamist president of Egypt, is supporting him. The Egyptian news media reports appear to have drawn much more attention to the obscure film trailer, which was posted on YouTube by someone using the name Sam Basili, who failed to respond to requests for comment on Tuesday. You know, why would Sam Basili, who had the courage to actually present the truth about Muhammad so that people wouldn't be beguiled by this horrendous religion, want to speak to someone who has the understanding of a flea, as is the case of the BBC, the moral judgment of a snake? As Mina Allah reported for the Egyptian Independent, photographs and video posted online showed protesters at the embassy in Cairo ripping apart an American flag as a result and replacing it with the jihadist flag, reading, "There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger." All right, we'll have to postpone our review of this story until this time tomorrow. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy.